Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. And this is this controversial show to some people, but it's really the reality for many others, over 4 million women in our country who are living unknowingly or married unknowingly a gay or bisexual man. And each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you do have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in to me at area code 646-716-4893, or you can email me if you're feeling a little radio shy at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. I want to thank our listening audience for adapting to our new Monday evening programming. I know it's been a challenge, and I think especially for me, it just feels so weird, you know, on a Monday night at 9 o'clock instead of 10 having this show. But I do appreciate the many comments and all the support that you've been giving me for the change of time, and we still have the same wonderful people coming here to give you support. It's just on a different day and a little earlier. But I always think that Monday's a good day to have a show because that's the end of a very stressful day for most people with their work habits and their jobs, and they come home at the end of a Monday and they need something to do to relax or try to refocus. So I think that having the show on Monday night is actually really helping people in getting through the rest of the week. I just want to make one or two announcements, and then I'm going to introduce my very special guest for tonight. The first announcement is that I'm really excited because finally the Healing Weekend is getting planned for here in Philadelphia, and it's going to be the first weekend on October, and I'll be putting up details on my website at www.gayhusbands.com, and I'll also be announcing it in all of my upcoming newsletters. and people can start making reservations soon. This is going to be a really dynamic weekend, and I'm hoping to meet many of you or see some of you again. And it's always so empowering meeting others who are living your experience, and I know that everyone who walks away just feels totally invigorated with new friendships that they've made that can last for years to come. And also, I wanted to mention that at this healing weekend, in addition to what we've done in the past as far as having people meet each other, learn about each other's stories, we'll also be having some really excellent workshops, and I'll keep in touch with you about that also. I just did want to mention my new newsletter did come out yesterday, so if you're not on my newsletter list and you would like to be on it, you can either get it on my blog, which I do post it there. Well, actually, I will be posting it there soon, at gayhusbands.com and hit into my blog. Or you can just write to me at bondk@aol.com. And always remember that if you feel like you need a boost, you can go back to these Blog Talk radio shows. We have years worth now listed with them. And each one really has wonderful guests to really help you move along your way. Tonight I'm very honored and very excited to have back a wonderful woman who I consider one of my best friends in life because she's really done so much as far as helping me in my thinking. And that's the wonderful woman, Janine Finelli. Janine, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, my friend Bonnie. Thank you so much for having me back.
It's always such a pleasure because you are such an inspiration. So let me just explain why you're an inspiration without, like, really embarrassing you too much. But first of all, when people look like Janine, they usually have a bad attitude because she's so beautiful, and they could really take this kind of attitude that I look better than you, which she never does to anyone. And what's really even worse is that as beautiful as she is on the outside, she's even more beautiful on the inside. So how could you not be jealous of somebody like you, Janine?
Aww.
I try not to be, but it's really hard. But in spite of my own jealousies, I love you because you are so good, and you've done so much for the women in our network as far as helping them with their health, and you're all about health. And in fact, Janine is the author of a book called Love Yourself to Health with Gusto. And as weird as this may sound, I am always picking up this book. I have this book right at my desk all the time because sometimes there's just something I want to do to relax a little bit. So I look into the book and I find a chapter or I find the alphabet of what I can do to improve my life and get a little bit stronger there. And it's always so interesting to read all the information you have in here. And this book is definitely available at any bookstore, through any outlet. Not in the bookstores, but you can always order them. But also at outlets like Amazon.com, BN.com. And it's a beautiful book with Janine's beautiful picture on the cover. And what's, like I say, just like with Janine, where she's so beautiful on the outside and even more beautiful in the inside, there's her beautiful picture on the cover. But inside, the information is just so much more wonderful than even the cover because you really do help women learn how they can turn their lives around with some really easy steps. And quite personally, as you know, Janine, when I met you, I'm not into health, obviously, not very much. I'm trying to keep my mental health at a stance here. But, I mean, I try to lead a somewhat healthy lifestyle, but certainly not into natural things like you are. But I've changed a lot of my evil ways thanks to you. I look at life differently. I look at food differently. And a lot of that I attribute to you and what you've taught me. So with that introduction, welcome, Janine. You can say hello now.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I didn't know I was going to hit the lotto tonight. And by hearing that, you totally make me feel that way, Bonnie. I am so happy that I have been able to leave a positive stamp on your life because
you have. You know what the most positive one is? Every time I go into the supermarket and I want to buy a muffin and pretend that it's not a donut, not a cupcake, and I remember, as you said, they're not really muffins, they're cupcakes. You can sit and justify that it's, you know, Raisin Bran, but it's still a cupcake. It still has, you know, the same bad effects on your body, right?
Exactly. So I like I'm glad that the book is something that you feel you can pick up and put down. And, you know, when I thought about the kind of book that I wanted to write, I wanted it to be sort of a resource like that because, you know, everybody loves a good novel once in a while. But for me, when all you've got is 5 or 10 minutes and you want to pick something up and read it or, you know, kind of just get some information and get on with your day and you don't have a lot of time to carve out to read, that's the kind of book I wanted it to be. So I'm glad that you feel that it's kind of one of those things to keep on hand. And actually, I've been hearing that a lot from different women and even, you know, different men who have the book and they've read it just because, you know, their wives have it or something. It's kind of, because it's called Love Yourself to Health with Gusto and it's ABC Guide for Surviving a Toxic Relationship, I tell people it's toxic thoughts, toxic people, toxic food, it's all of those things. So the wisdom in there is not necessarily for somebody who is in a toxic relationship. Of course, being a part of this group, we all know why it was written. But I'm finding that it's kind of the positive effects of it are far-reaching into, you know, just happily married couples and friends and things like that, or anybody who wants to make a shift in their diet or their exercise or their thinking, because it is all of those things in there. And like I said, we all know what had inspired me to write it. But so thank you for saying that. It's been quite a journey, and I look back and I think the vulnerability that I put out there and the things that I said and the you know, the emotion that went into it always reminds me that when I am on Facebook or I'm you know, connecting with one of the women in our group and I feel their pain and I hear their pain and I read their pain, it just, I'm removed from it for a couple of years, but I'm also, I still recall it and still can be very present for people because it was such an emotional thing for me. So I don't think it's ever going to be a situation where 5 years down the road, 10 years from down the road, I'll ever be that person who's like, just don't think about it, just get over it, just deal with it, this too shall pass. That's not my approach on it because I know how much it chewed me up and spit me out, and I see what it's doing to our women.
Right, and, you know, once again, we get ourselves into a situation that's beyond most of our control, not knowing what we're walking into. Mm-hmm. But your book really helps any kind of toxic relationship because the reality of it is that many times our women are coming out of a different toxic relationship into a new one. So mm-hmm. sometimes it could be growing up in a family that's very dysfunctional. Sometimes it could come after one bad marriage. You know, you had a bad marriage to someone who was abusive. Mm-hmm. So you're looking for someone who will be kinder. And I know that when I tell people what you have on your hands, and it's like just such an epiphany to them when I tell them this. And,
right.
You know, I tell them that was inspired by Janine Finelli. Don't give me credit for it because it's you who put it out there because you have this tattooed on your arm, on your two, you know, hands.
Mm-hmm.
Well, two words and then one, right?
Right.
But it's three words all together. But, you know, tattooed on Janine's beautiful hands are the words, love is kind. And this is, to me, the epiphany of what that came to me when you said those simple words that you don't have to say anything else. This sums it up in three words that if you're going through a relationship where you're being heartbroken, yelled at, demeaned, made to feel that you're less than, this isn't kindness. This isn't what love is about.
Mm-mm.
No, love is about having compassion, understanding, and making that person your priority to try to make them happy. I mean, you can't make someone happy, but you can compliment them and make them feel better every day instead of worse. And
absolutely.
Three simple words that just really sum it all up for anyone in a relationship that they're not supposed to be in. How did you come up with those words?
It is. It just simplifies it. I feel like I don't need to, you know. I think I came up with it because I wanted a reminder on my wrist, tattooed every day, because I was that person who would write sticky notes and write on my mirror in the bathroom. And I wanted a reminder on my wrist every day to see, and it's twofold. It's love is kind, so if somebody's not kind to me, they're not being loving. And you and I have discussed in the past the difference between somebody being in a bad mood and saying they're sorry. The destructive relationship is what we're talking about, you know, the all of the things that we're dealing with. So I'm not talking about the occasional crabby day. Oh, my God, you know, you came home and snapped at me. You don't love me. We're not talking about that. But
we're talking about that happens to everybody.
Right, right. That happens to everybody. But I also think it was just kind of the way that there would be no escaping my daughter seeing it either, and my son. And for them to just simplify things, we make things so difficult, you know, in romantic relationships. Gosh, you know, he said he hated me, and he locked me out of all the bank accounts, and he called me these names, and he broke the glasses in the house, and he did all these things, and he didn't come home for 3 days. But then you get an apology and flowers and dinner and this, you know, emotion overload that comes from them. And so in your mind, you're confused, and understandably so, because it's that pendulum that goes back and forth. But I always just started to think, love doesn't do that. Love doesn't have to apologize for such horrific stuff all the time. Love is kind. This person must not love me, because their actions are the opposite of everything that's kind. And then the flip side of that is, why aren't I being kind to myself? Why am I accepting this? Why am I allowing this? And what am I doing to allow this behavior in my home, when my home is supposed to be a sacred, special place? So it was also a reminder that I was not being kind to myself. I wasn't.
Now, when you first got into the relationship with your husband, were there any clues or hints? Was there anything to tip you off that he was gay?
No. I mean, well, not that sunk into my head full of rocks at the time, because I think, like most women, I just kind of at what was wrong with me. And you always said that straight wives make the best wives, because we're so patient and we do anything for the family and we overlook and we give to the point of...
And we keep trying harder and harder to make somebody happy who's never happy
with
us.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'd have to say, you know, there was never that emotional connection. And for me, I kind of gravitated towards him because, being a single mom, it was kind of refreshing having somebody who wasn't always wanting to be with me without my son, who was little at the time. And so you kind of meet somebody, and they're getting tickets to hockey games and shows, and everything's a big family affair. And, you know, and that was kind of nice in a way. So I felt like, okay. And then, yeah, of course, the intimacy was never there from the beginning. It was just like, when it was really... I knew better, and this was not better. So I was like, huh. And I was like, okay, but probably thought, like most of the women do, okay, you know what? Good to my child, and this is... So you have this mental checklist, and you feel selfish, and you feel like, well, okay, that's not that important, because A, B, C, and D are good. And, you know, and so, but yeah, I did, early on, in retrospect, there were lots of signs, definitely signs of not kindness and dishonesty and not being present in the relationship and never keeping a promise when it came to either vows or money or, you know, things like that. So there was lots of other control, emotional control, financial control, physical control over things in the house, you know, right off the bat. And so then you find yourself in a situation, and then I found myself pregnant, which I swear she's such a miracle.
Another feeling, definitely.
Oh, my God, what a gift from God. And so then you sit there and you're like, okay, well, you know, it's got to get better. So you just continually work on the marriage, all while you're not really seeing the fact that you're the only one working on it. I was the only one working on it.
Mm-hmm. Did your husband find fault with you?
On a good day, he probably found fault with about 20 different things about me on a good day. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So there was nothing I could do right. There was nothing I could say right. There was nothing I could, I couldn't look right. I couldn't cook right. I couldn't pour a glass of wine right. I couldn't do anything right because, extremely critical. And you know, that defense mechanism of getting the attention off of them and putting it on you and finding your faults, but I didn't see it. I mean, I didn't see that that's why he was doing it.
Now,
in the beginning,
when you first met him, he wasn't that way, right?
When I first met him, he was the opposite of the typical guy who wants to be around you all the time and wants to be in your bed all the time every second you don't have your kid. So I kind of gravitated towards that. He was the first time he ever really he got distant and he got moody, but the first time he ever really, 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 really snapped at me was actually it was like the day after we got engaged. And I think that he probably at that point felt like a caged animal. And would always say, well, you know, I'm sorry, I'm acting like this, I'm stressed because of work, or, gosh, now we've got a wedding to plan, and we owned two houses, so now we've got a house to sell. Like, it was always all this stuff that when you're younger, or you're starting a new life with somebody, you want to do it together. You want to dig into all those life things and create.
All right, those are the
together.
Exciting things when you're getting started,
sure. Yeah, they're the exciting things. You're building something, and so... And I didn't even mean it has anything to do with being young. It's just you're building something with somebody, you know? And but he was completely stressed out over that stuff to the point of threatening to cancel the wedding several times. Yeah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. And were you very confused as to why this was happening?
I was very confused. I was very confused because I dated different people in the past, all different kinds of personalities, but nobody who was as moody and as shut off from sex. I mean, I didn't know men could not want sex. I mean, I didn't even know that existed. And of course, that's because in the past I was dating, you know, men who were into women. So there's a big difference, but obviously. It was very hard. It was very
Did
hard.
Did you have any doubts before you actually said, I do? Were you rethinking it at all or not?
I was, because we built a house, we moved in together, and the wedding was 6 months after that, once we closed on the home, and everything was just so stressful, and everything was just like, and I'm sitting here thinking, oh, my God, I'm pregnant. When I got married, I was 3 months pregnant. I'm pregnant and, you know, all these wonderful things are going on and we just built a beautiful home and why is this person not happy? And you coined the phrase, it's like living in Alice in Wonderland where everything's upside down, everything's distorted, nothing made sense. And I felt like I was in a circular room bumping into every single, I didn't know which way to go. I didn't know which wind was up. I wouldn't even have known where to begin at that point other than, you know, I just started praying, you know. I was just like, what in the heck is going on? I didn't know. And it's funny because people now who know me, they're like, we don't see you like that, Janine. You're so focused and you're so present. I said, yeah, well, that was 12 years ago, 13 years ago, and I was a different person then. But you just don't, because you don't even know it exists. So you're not even thinking like that. You don't even know that. I didn't even know that exists.
Right. I mean, we're raised and socialized to believe that gay people are people attracted to the same people.
Right.
So why would we think they'd be going after us and marrying us?
And
you know, we're
and
told that gay people can't have sex with women, you know, gay men.
Right.
But
well,
they have
can.
Sex
they,
with us.
Yeah. Oh,
right.
Yeah. Clearly they.
Pull, you
know? Yeah. Yeah. And they do. And that's how they. And they do, and they go on to get remarried and have other women and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you're not, and you're just, and that's that's, I think, the tragedy, is what it does to a woman's soul and her spirit and her body. And all I could think of, I remember one time we were on vacation, and I remember thinking, God, like, does this guy ever just give it up, you know, without some major ordeal and everything having to be in alignment and, you know, everything having to be just perfect. Does it? And I remember thinking, I'm going to spend the rest of my life like this, and I'm going to go through menopause. And I've heard stories about going through menopause, and some people are fine, but there's varying degrees. And I thought, I'm going to be that person who's got hot flashes and no respect and no love and affection from my husband. And I was like, I got to get out of this crap before I go through menopause, because if this doesn't kill me, going through menopause with someone that's that mean, that really makes you feel ugly when you're supposed to be at your healthiest and your best and your hormones are all good, I thought, that's going to kill me, and that's going to be cruel, and I don't think I'm going to be able to handle it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So did you ever actually catch him or no?
I never physically caught him. I did hire a private investigator, and there were different instances that made me wonder, like, why did he rent porn with a friend who's a guy when I was sleeping? And I just thought, you know, but that was just years before I even figured it out. So there were little things like, there were things like that, but I never actually was one of those women who's like, got the evidence, was there, saw it, blah, 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 like a lot of women have and some people long to have. But I think for me, I did have enough in texts and in, you know, emails and voice messages that I knew that somebody who's into women in no way, shape, or form would be saying those things or have that stuff on their phone or things like that and just be so angry and so hateful towards me. So every little thing kind of was a puzzle piece that created the picture for me. And I remember you telling me, you might not ever walk in. You might not. Most people don't. And I just found so much peace with that, Bonnie, because I realized, you know, these guys are good. A lot of them are good. And they do. They get you so broken down that you really do think you're freaking crazy. And so I got to the point where I put enough stuff together and then learned a little bit, of, you know, from people in the community. And I was like, this is it, because there's 50 things on your checklist. I had probably 99% of them, you know. So,
were there any in particular you liked the best that tipped you off the most? I know, it's really sad, but it is true that these guys just don't have the same emotional connection.
No,
because they're gay men, and as hard as they try to pretend they're straight, you know, they just can't pull it off. I mean, but there's always a lack of that emotional connection. That's not to say they can't be nice. Some women have very nice gay husbands.
Right.
But they're
right.
Gay husbands, and, you know, it's not going to change the fact that you're married to a gay man who wants to have a man and not you.
Right.
So that
has
to detract from your self-esteem and your sexual esteem, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, I would rather have a friend who's like that, but not the one person who I'm sharing my bed with, sharing my home with. You know, like, that was just too sacred. And, but I can understand why people, you know, I know there's a lot of nice, kind, loving men out there who are in love with another man and come out to their wives, and wives are heartbroken because they feel like they lost their best friend. And I can't relate to that story, because he never was my best friend. And I told him, I said, leaving this marriage is leaving me nothing to miss. I don't miss having coffee with you. I don't miss talking with you. I don't miss kissing you. I don't miss dancing with you, holding your hand. Definitely don't miss sex with you. You know, any of that stuff, because there was no... It became so abusive. It was always there, but then it just was exponentially through the roof, like, you know, me getting locked out of the house on a 90 to 95 degree day because I wouldn't wash his car because I just got over the flu and he locked me out. And so just every day something. So in moments like that was when I just thought, okay, I could cry again, or I'm locked out of the house, it's 95 degrees, I really don't feel good. I'm going to go in my car, and I'm going to put on my Sounds of Tuscany music, and I'm going to listen to it, and I'm going to breathe, and I'm going to put the AC on. And then I'm going to walk over to my girlfriend's house, and, you know, that's what I did. And I just figured that the more I fought and the more I say in my book, the Bible says there's a time to laugh and a time to cry and a time to zip it. The zip it is my part. And I realized that every time I got combative, even though I knew in my heart that I was right and that I had a point to make, it was like putting my head on a guillotine. Because it didn't matter. He was coming back at me twofold and threefold, and it was never going to sink in. I read something the other day on Facebook. It said, trying to get through to a crazy person is like trying to smell the number nine. And I thought, that's so true. Like, there is no way. There is no way.
And I think what women have to understand is that, you know, we love these men, and we marry them in good faith, and... Mm-hmm. We try to keep loving harder and harder because we keep hoping that against hope, you know, they're going to change their minds. And, of course, sometimes that very confusing word comes into play. It's called bisexual. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our women are very confused because they think, well, I'm not married to a gay man. Obviously, he had sex with me. He might be bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't change what is.
Mm-mm.
I mean, what's in a name anyway? If, like I always say, if you cross that penis line, you know, you're a penis man.
Right.
And that's really what it comes down to. If you're thinking about it, if you're acting on it, if you're fantasizing, watching gay porno, you know, once you cross over that line, because straight men don't do that.
Right.
And
right. They don't.
They really don't.
They don't. That's as simple and honest as saying love is kind. Straight men don't ever want to have sex with a man, ever.
Or watch other men having sex.
Or watch
I know that some men try
sex.
To tell their wives, well, I'm just curious. No, straight men aren't curious to watch that. That would be something very appalling to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want to watch two men having rough sex. That's not their idea of, you know, sexual fantasy.
Right.
So if you're watching right?
Yeah, and I think for some men, too, and for some women, let's face it, I am right there with so many of these women. My ego was really hurt, and, you know, it would have been a lot easier for me to say bisexual, because then there's some shred of hope that he actually was attracted to me, but he wasn't.
Uh-huh. Right.
And so our egos get wounded, and that's okay. But to the point where it gets debilitating and where you're putting your own needs aside for this label, which I personally believe that I can't say that all people are or all people aren't, but I do believe that the majority move through that because it's easier to say that and it's easier to let someone down slowly by saying that. And
or
it's
to give them false hope also.
To give them false hope because I mean, they like you said, they want you to keep their cover. They don't want you under their covers. They've got a mortgage with you. They love their kids. A lot of them do. Some of them could care
mm-hmm.
less about their kids.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they need you for reasons other than you need them for. So, you know, it's a lot easier to move through that, I'm bisexual and I'm confused. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe there's something for me to work with here. Maybe if I was prettier.
Exactly.
Maybe if I was calmer. Maybe if I was
mm-hmm.
more fun and more spontaneous and, you know, colored my hair. And it's never that. It's never that.
Right.
Ever.
But by saying bisexual, you're giving people that false illusion that if you can love me and you can want another man, well, if I make you love me, that's how I felt. When I first thought my ex-husband was bisexual,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I was willing to give him that much of a chain to pull, I said,
mm-hmm.
listen, if you're bisexual, and I said, you want to be with somebody once every 6 months, and I don't have to know about it, and it's a consenting adult, I'll just turn my head, and I won't ask you where you were for that afternoon, I can live with that, you know, because we all play that game, what can I live with?
What
and I had a little baby, and I was weakened from being emotionally beaten down anyway. And I wasn't looking to end my marriage at that point. I was hoping that if I'd give that inch, you know, that he would take it and then things would be good between us.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would say, boy, isn't she a supportive wife? And, you know, I'm so lucky to have her. And
right.
I would just blank it out in my mind and pretend it never happened because how much can I live with? But
mm-hmm.
that's not the way it worked. But in my head, I thought, I'm going to try so much harder now. Now that I know I have a chance, you know, I'm going to be the best wife that he could ever ask for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I worked twice as hard, cleaned twice as much, cooked twice as much, went shopping, did his clothes, anything he wanted. I was right there on the spot thinking, I have a chance.
Right.
And that's the cruel part, because we have no chance.
Right. That is the, that's the real crime in the whole thing, is wasting days, that the love will never be reciprocated, the trust will never be reciprocated. It's not a rough patch in a relationship. It is completely not even
a broken patch that can't be fixed.
Yeah.
It's like one
it's
of those gaping
patch.
Potholes that we're riding into now from the winter.
Absolutely.
The only thing is, with a pothole, you can patch it. With being married to a gay man, it's never going to patch.
No, it's never going to patch. And I think there's a lot of work that women have to do with information like this, which is that, do they want to live in their soul or do they want to live in their ego? Because the ego is really like, and it's not just egotistical, like, oh my God, he picked somebody else over me. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the wounded part of us, the feeling of inadequacy, the feeling of being unattractive or unliked or unloved. And then the whole thing about that is, you know, we have so much riding on our shoulders. Oh my God, the fear that comes into play when you think about letting your family in and opening up that whole can of worms and all of those opinions. And, you know, and that's just a mess, because I see a lot of the comments that women post and, you know, family members and everything that's being said. And it's like, you really have to be very, very careful. And I write about this in the book on who you let in and who you don't and what kind of advice you want, because you're going to drive yourself crazy, because people will always have more questions than you have answers, because you're in this storm and you don't know enough. You're figuring it out, and then you've got all these other people asking questions. So, you know, being wounded, and, you know, it really knocks you down, and it hurts so bad. And I know those images that go through your head, and, you know, you're wondering things, and you're feeling like, you know, Nick Nolte. You're just such a vigilante, and you're looking, and you're investigating, and you want to know. But then it gets to that point, like, What am I doing this for? Like, what I said to myself is, I've given this person 10 years of marriage, 12 years with him. I have done more for this, and I know that in my heart I could turn around and walk away and know that I gave everything that I had to this relationship and to these kids, and now I'm going to put my effort into raising healthy kids that aren't manipulated by a narcissist or, you know, love is kind, so that they have a barometer for what a healthy relationship is. It doesn't care if you drive up, you know, in a 1975-year-old car that's going to fall apart, or you drive up in a new Mercedes. It doesn't. Love doesn't care. That's not
mm-hmm.
love. Love doesn't care if your bottle of wine is $80 or if it's $5. Love is kind, and so that is what my kids, that's what I wanted them to learn. But it had to get to that point. You know, I say in my book, if it's okay, I just want to read something here.
Oh, please do.
Because making this choice, ladies, it's not easy, and it requires you getting out of your comfort zone, and it requires you not, and I'm not talking about the pity party, like, poor me, why did this happen? It requires you taking the action and saying, I'm not going to let this happen anymore. So what I say is, once you become soul sick, heart sick, and physically sick, the choice is yours. Do you want more of the same, or do you want to live? Every hurtful word, every physical blow, every unloving gesture, every moment of deceit, every feeling of betrayal is brewing inside you. Those things seep into your core and destruct the pillars of your health. The results are low self-esteem, loneliness, acting out sexually or withdrawing sexually, fear, failure syndrome, and unresolved resentment. Those effects then manifest into physical effects, such as addictions, alcohol, drugs, caffeine, sugar, smoking, allergies from depressed immune function, insomnia, high blood pressure, eating disorders, panic attacks, phobias, rashes, migraines, digestive issues, heartburn, weight gain, weight loss. Unless you roll up your sleeves and love yourself to health, no one can do it for you. Worse yet, do you want to bring any of those conditions to your next relationship? I'm not even talking about a romantic relationship. Your relationships with your children, your friends, your parents, your coworkers, they all require you to be present, to use fear to your advantage, and to live authentically if you want those dealings to be benevolent for all involved. So that's the kind of space that I got in when I made that shift was, you got to be kidding me. I am not getting on antidepressants for you. I am not drinking any more wine to be around you. I am not using a sound machine and earplugs and Ambien just to sleep in the same room with you. I am not having high blood pressure because of you anymore. I've given you everything. I'll be damned if I'm going to give you my health and my future that I might have a happy, healthy future with someone else. So it was kind of that pivotal moment for me where it was like, wait a minute, oh, no. It was kind of that the buck stops here. And it wasn't that, I felt empowered by it, but it was still a struggle to enforce it and to follow through and every day to live those thoughts that I had. But it just goes back to every time you hear, your thoughts become your words become your actions. If you start thinking physically, like picture in your head your hand and your heart in your hand and giving it over to this person. Is that what you want to do? No, you want to live and you want joy and you want to feel good. And you're not going through this because you want to go through this the rest of your life. You're going through this now, but there is a way out. And it requires a plan, and there's so many different things in my book that I talk about on how I did it, even if during the day all I did was just breathe and not put myself in the company of negative people or, you know, whatever it was, but it requires that moment where you say, you know what, I read somewhere that our mothers tell us not to get upset when we see what someone else playing with our old toys, you know? And it's like, yeah, I really don't care. I really don't care who he's fooling now. I know in my heart what he's like. I know in my heart what he brought to my life, and I'm going to be a better person for it. And I don't know exactly how, but I want to be a better person for it. And that was the way that I started thinking was, it's not my trip anymore. It's his trip, and he's dragged me along. And I'm cutting myself free. And
I think the most important thing you're saying is something that I am strongly advocating all the time. If you have to take medication to stay in a mm-hmm. relationship, that mm-hmm. has to be your red flag number one, that why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would you have to change your thinking to stay with someone or
right.
to numb yourself so you don't have to think about that person because you're living with him?
Right.
I mean, that should be, to me, the fact that women have to alter their minds. You just don't know how much that disturbs me, Janine, more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And
I understand that
women have to take, you know, some kinds of tranquilizer or, you know, some Valium or Xanax,
mm-hmm.
you know, to stay in these relationships
mm-hmm.
so they can get out. But they have to realize that if you need to take drugs to stay in a relationship, there's something really wrong there, and it's time
right.
to get out.
Right.
Right?
Right. And that's when I realized that being kind to myself wasn't going to be an easy road. But if I'm not worth fighting for to myself, how can I expect anybody else in my life in the future to hold me in high regard the way I want to be? If
mm-hmm.
I didn't say, oh, no, I'm not accepting this anymore, I want to stay healthy and I will do whatever I can. And it was really tough. But I decided and... you know, which is why I wrote the book, but these were all things I did every day, whether it was, you know, a lot of these things people have heard before, but if they would just try them and commit to it for 2 to 4 weeks, they would see such a big difference, whether it's journaling or, you know, finding exercise, you know, whether it's just going for a walk. You know, I'm a big loner when it comes to exercise. Me, I'm out on trails, I'm alone a lot, I put my
mm-hmm.
headphones in, I listen to music, you know, even if it's just sleeping in a different room and getting out of that room and out of that bed and saying, you know what, screw this, I'm going to sleep. I am so exhausted, I can barely function. And I remember being like that, like waking up crying because I just dreaded having to get through the day and, you know, put my happy face on and pack lunches and bring kids to school and be present for them. But then I realized they deserve a mom who's present. You know, they deserve that. And so, you know, maybe it was working in my garden, or maybe it was just rearranging the whole one of the rooms in the house and cleaning, and or calling a friend, or at the very base of everything, you know how strongly I feel about nutrition. At the very base of everything, you want to build a house that's not made of straw so that, you know, these guys can come in and blow it down. You want to build a house that's solid and strong and can withstand everything from being told, you know, you're a bitch and you're a loser and you're this and you're that and you're all these things, and can also withstand, you know, when you go to work, because, you know, you have to drag yourself to work and you're not feeling like going. Joe Schmo is just getting over the flu, sitting next to you. He sneezes. You don't want that. You've got to build a strong house. And you've got to think about it like the three little pigs, because, you know, the big bad wolf is coming, and it's not a wolf. It's a virus. It's a bacteria. It's a disease. It's depression. It's diabetes. It's all of these
anxiety. Right.
Yeah, anxiety. And it's all of those things. And so at the base of all of these things, what you put in your body is going to help you. It's going to help you have clarity. It's going to help you have energy. It's going to help you sleep, all of these things. And that's why, you know, there's not one magic answer, but starting with one thing is better than not doing anything. And that one thing really should be you saying, I love myself so much that they say the law, you know, when people hear about the law of attraction, when you really believe that you're worth it, other people will believe that you're worth it, and you attract those people into your life. And that's the kind, it's better to be alone than be in the wrong company. But as soon as you change your thinking, you really set up some boundaries and you learn what to say yes to and what to say no to. Because these people will take whatever they can. And we all know that. We all know that.
I think first it's a matter of just making up your mind that I don't want to live like this anymore.
Yeah.
And then you can do things before you leave the marriage that are little changes, you know, each week that make you healthier so that you can make better decisions. And certain foods will really, you know, destroy the way you think. And, of course, I know you're very anti-sugar, which I also am very anti-sugar because, you know, I am diabetic.
Right.
And because I am a sugar addict, so I know how important it is not to have it in my diet at all.
It's so easy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I fall off the wagon every, you know, few months. But if I don't get right back up on that wagon, then I'm going to be in worse trouble.
Right.
And it's a matter of saying, you know, I want to live. So
you want to live, right. And when you're exhausted, when you're exhausted and you're meeting the needs of work and children and, you know, even false appearances in public that you still might be going through with your spouse and all that kind of stuff, you know, your body needs energy, and so you are going to crave quick, fast energy, which is caffeine and sugar, which is going to disrupt your hormones more, which is going to add to more weight gain, which is going to disrupt your thyroid and, you know, and your sleep patterns and your moods and, you know, everything. So it is, you know, nourishing your body is very, very, very important with the right foods and really detoxing. That's why the book, you know, I talk about detox, but detoxing from negative people and unhealthy foods and too much alcohol and too much coffee and too much sugar and all those things, they will derail us. And that's when I've been a health coach since 2008, and I didn't leave my marriage until 2013. And I always felt like, God, there's this black cloud hanging over my head. I feel like such a hypocrite because I know what I should be doing. I need to leave this relationship because it keeps pushing me in all of the unhealthy directions. And I really had to get clear on, at that point, at, you know, 41, 42 years old, what I wanted and what I wanted for my kids and what kind of legacy I wanted for them. And to look at them someday and say, you know what? I did what I could, somebody else had their own ideas about what they wanted, but, you know, and free myself from it and show them what a strong parent is. And I got to tell you, I have a great relationship with both of my kids that I'm so grateful for. But they had questions and things like that, and you tell them in age-appropriate ways. But I started to, instead of get through to him, I started to focus on them and helping them to put up boundaries, not just with a narcissistic parent, but people in general. And I think, you know, they're much more, they know what their true north feels like and what home base feels like and what feels right to them. And as soon as somebody comes into their life that's a taker or a pusher or negative, they're like, whoa, that doesn't feel good. So they kind of are connected to that sense earlier on, and I talk to them a lot.
Which is, I think, communication is like a key there. We did have a note come in from a woman named Rita in Arizona who's listening, and I told her, you know, she asked if I could ask you this question.
Great.
She said, could you ask Janine, what is a glycemic diet?
A glycemic diet. Hi, Rita. you know, the glycemic index consists of different foods and how they affect our blood sugar negatively or positively. So, you know, a low glycemic diet is a very healthy way to go. Traditionally, those types of foods don't have a lot of sugar. They don't have a lot of starches. They have fiber and protein and lots of vitamins. So, like a very low high glycemic breakfast would be a bagel and cream cheese and a cup of coffee and a glass of orange juice. Another high glycemic breakfast might be a quote-unquote smoothie that has pineapple and mango and orange juice and yogurt. Okay, there's tons of sugar in there. Whereas a lower glycemic breakfast might be a piece of whole grain toast with avocado on it or hummus on it or almond butter on it, or a smoothie that has unsweetened almond milk and kale and blueberries. So the less sugar you have in your diet and the less foods that you have that turn to sugar quickly is a lower glycemic diet, which means it's not knocking the heck out of your pancreas. You're not releasing too much insulin and then having your insulin crash. You might have heard, Rita, about, you know, a lot of paleo diet type stuff, which is a very low glycemic diet. It's lean meats and eggs and good quality fish and vegetables and not a lot of sugary fruits, pretty much no grains and starches.
Is that similar to the Atkins diet?
Well, it's similar in the way that it's reduced, you know, the carbohydrates from grains and of course, crackers and candies and all that kind of stuff. Atkins, you know, it makes sense to cut all that out, but Atkins went full speed ahead with telling people to have, you know, go to McDonald's and not have the hamburger. The quality of the food that Atkins, and maybe now it's a little bit different, but the quality of the food that they came out with, it didn't matter if you were eating roadkill as long as you weren't having it on bread, pretty much. So, and it was a very low-fiber diet, whereas paleo, they really do try and get more fiber in there, like Brussels sprouts and broccoli, and which are low-glycemic, high-fiber, anti-cancer properties, things like that. So glycemic is, and that's, you know, for me, I'm a huge believer in keeping blood sugar stable. It helps us to lose weight. It helps manage our hormones. And so typically diets like that really don't include a lot of grains. It might include a little bit of brown rice here and there, but not a lot of grains. So that's a good question. So it keeps your blood sugar stable. Your pancreas is happy. It's not overworked. You're not getting those spikes. You're not getting those cravings. And, you know, people usually want to see a difference 2-3 days into it. But usually within 3 to 4 weeks of following a very low glycemic diet with foods that aren't spiking your insulin, you will feel a difference. People can put cake in front of you and you won't even bat an eye because you won't want it. You'll lose weight, things like that. I hope that's helpful. I mean, there's a lot of information out there, but that's the gist of it. It's the different foods and how they affect our blood sugar.
Well, we had one more question as you were talking that came in. And this one is from Sarah in Maine. She said, could you please ask Janine if natural sugar, such as in fruit, is good for you? Now, I would like to know that myself because I really can't eat it without my sugar spiking. So
right.
I stay away from fruit.
Right. And I would have to say, to answer your question, is natural sugar in fruit good for you? I would say no. Now, what's great about some fruits, obviously the vitamins, and, you know, some fruits have fiber. Avocado is a fruit, believe it or not. There's a lot of fiber in there, and that is that's very low sugar. But as far as bananas and mangoes, and even an apple has, you know, 15, 16 grams of sugar in it. So I'd have to say that sugar is sugar is sugar. And, you know, when you think about the fruits that you're choosing, you want to choose low sugar ones, like berries are always a great choice. You know, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of a banana here and there. And, you know, a lot of it has to do also with your workout level. So for somebody who's running 10 miles a day and makes a smoothie that has a whole banana in it and, you know, some pineapple and stuff like that, I'd have to say, you know, it depends on your sedentary level as well. But sugar is in the fruit itself is not good. But the fruit has so many vitamins and minerals. So I'm not saying fruit is bad. I just think it should be minimal. And I know, you know, someone asked me recently, they said, well, they're just grapes and they eat tons of grapes, which is all sugar.
All sugar.
And so you want to use your fruits sparingly. So I know a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, I say never drink fruit juices because they just, you know that, Bonnie, they just spike your sugar.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't drink diet fruit juices and things like that. So, unfortunately, there's a lot of attention on natural sugars and stuff like that. And, of course, eating the fruit, eating an apple for a snack is always going to be better than eating Halloween candy.
Hershey bar, right.
Right. It's always going to be better, but the sugar is still the same, and it still counts as sugar, and you need to look at your day and say, where have I had sugar? That apple counts as sugar.
And I guess that's where the hard thing is to balance, because a lot of people, you know, on certain diets, you know, it's, you know, eat all the fruit you want. And
right.
I just know from my own experiences of making that mistake that if I eat a grapefruit or if I eat a piece of pineapple or an orange, my sugar just spikes.
Right.
Higher than it would, and more quickly than it would if I was eating a piece of cake.
Exactly.
I mean, those fruits really have a high level of sugar in them, so I have to stay away.
They're loaded. And one way to combat that is if you are going to have an apple, add a little almond butter or peanut butter to it, or have a handful of cashews or nuts, because when you add fat to that, it really does slow down the rate at which your body converts it to sugar. So you're not going to get as much of a spike, because you've got fat and protein mixed in there. So, you know, that's why it is always better to add just a little bit of fat to an apple, to a banana, you know, things like that can help the blood sugar stay stable. You're still eating the sugar, still eating the calories, still have to, you know, work out here and there or get your body moving. But, yeah, minimal.
And that's why, you know, I really suggest every woman who wants to love herself, you can start by loving yourself to health. And that means physical health and mental health. But, you know, if you feel better about yourself, if your mind's not clouded from eating bad foods or eating too much junk food, I mean, I really can't talk about this because I am diabetic, but I know people who even aren't diabetic, if they eat a lot of the wrong foods, they feel lousy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just you don't just have to be diabetic to have to watch out for foods. I know a lot of people who don't have diabetes, if they eat too much sugar, if they eat too much starch, you know, they feel filled and they feel lethargic and they can't move. I mean, you know, it has that effect on everybody's body. So
Absolutely.
Just by doing little things that you can do, it's not like Janine's saying to you, here's a makeover, start doing all of this now. You know, it's little things like how to rest your eyes, how to drink teas that are good for you. You know, if it's a matter of taking a walk or something that's small that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like one of the things that I love that you put in this book is how to, you know, that one of the tips is saying no. And it said it took me a very long time to learn how to say no. I found out that it's even better to let your actions speak for themselves. Maybe it was when I said no to that phone call that was going to leave me feeling verbally abused, or when I said no to going to a party where I felt as if I was just the designated driver. I understand that being in a toxic relationship has led you down a path that you never thought you would be on. You overlook, you ignore, you accept. You are a human filter through which the dirtiest filth can pass and come out the other end, and looking and smelling like a rose. Because of your love, hope for change, and true desire for peace, your actions have screamed, "Yes, I will accept whatever crap you throw my way, because I have become a doormat for you to wipe your feet on." No one has the power to change your situation. Getting to that place inside you requires a delicate balance of staying ethical and getting ugly as a strong, bitchy, furious, armed and ready. Up until now, you've done everything within your power, including compromising your beliefs in order to have an amicable situation, but you just can't anymore. It's not working. No, however, can be very expensive. Fighting a battle or really becoming solid and grounded in your beliefs can be costly. Legal fees, moving costs, and other monetary bills associated with operation I call BS add up. Saying no certainly means that you are no longer accepting unsavory behavior and that you are hiring the right people to enforce your position. And that, Bella, is worth every penny. Take it to another level. Do you want your children to see you as a woman who has given up because life has beaten her down? By saying no, you can show your children that you've got their backs through the fire of whatever comes your way. Walking through that fire can be terrifying, but by saying no, you show your children that your devotion to them cannot be burned, charred, or destroyed. In fact, you can become an example of strength by saying no to such degrading treatment. Stay clear, focused, and patient as you begin to find your no. Surround yourself with team support, your family, friends, lawyers, mediators, and private investigators. Your no's will be heard or felt loud and clear. And I know that it's really hard when you're living with somebody who's sociopathic, pathological, you know, or narcissistic. So, you know, we can name a whole bunch of words. To be able to do that, you know, because they just jump down your throat. Mm. But you still have to put up some boundaries. I'm not saying say no to everything at first, but you can walk out of a room. You can say, no, I will not listen to this. No, you're not going to talk to me like this. Because these people are bullies, and they really love to bully you. Don't you feel that way?
Oh, definitely. And I found what worked with me, thank you for reading that, I found what worked with me was talking to him like he was three. So he would be all in a tizzy and yelling and name-calling and breaking things, and, you know, and I would kind of put my hand on the counter and say, now listen, clearly you're upset. However, that's not really my problem. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take our daughter and I'm going to go down the street and I'm going to have dinner there and I'm going to do this. And when I come back into this house, I expect your little tantrum to be over with. Now, there were times that I tried that and he'd look at me like, huh, what? You know, in between breaking stuff and whatever. And there's other times I just got to that point where I just kept thinking, I am not giving him my blood pressure. Now, he's yelling, he's screaming, he's doing all this stuff. Why on earth am I going to rise up for that? It's not worth it. I love myself too much. So I started in my head just constantly role-playing and constantly finding that voice that you would have with a three-year-old. Okay, I am not really fond of the way that you're acting, and since you like to come home and walk in this house and, you know, ABC, whatever it is, I'm not going to listen to it. And so you have your little pity party by yourself. I'm going to go outside, or I'm going down the street to my girlfriend's house, or whatever it is. And I started doing that because I didn't do that for so long. I was yelling. I was crying. I was mad. But that didn't work. It didn't work, and it was never going to work. So I took that power back, and I stayed calm because I loved normal blood pressure because it got elevated. And I had 100 or 90 over 50 while I was pregnant. I never had high blood pressure until him. And I thought, I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm. And you get to the point where you have to protect yourself, because he's not going to be there to protect you. He's going to be there to destroy you.
He's going to be there to destroy me. And then the two people that I say I love the most, which are my children, what is that doing for them? I had to just knock it off, and I had to, you know, and I say this to myself, I had to woman up. I want to be treated like a woman. I wanted respect. I wanted, you know, and I might have had a shred to go on of you know, rebuilding a life and all that kind of stuff. But I was like, you know what? That's why in my book, and this is a beautiful time to say, and of course in my book I respect all religions. For me, I would think of Jesus, and there's no better time for me to recall Lent and Good Friday coming up, and if he could have everybody against him saying all of these things that weren't true, and nothing fazed him to the point where he even wavered in his belief of what he had to do and how he had to do it, then I can deal with one person against me. And I started thinking like that. And I started thinking,
that's a great way to think.
You know, I have so many people for me and one crazy, crazy brain against me, and that's putting it very nicely, that I can do anything. If Jesus had thousands of people against him, how did he not even second-guess anything? How did he stay up there on the cross and say, you know, forgive them, Father, they know not what they've done? Oh, my gosh, okay, I can do this. And I just kept thinking like that. And especially for me at this time with Lent and Good Friday and Easter, I'm always just like, thank you for showing me the way, because I would not have been able to do it. But I can deal with one crazy person, because I have too many great people in my life.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great attitude to take. And
it helped me.
I can't believe that our whole hour, it's even past the hour, but thank you so
yes.
much for staying on extra. But I want to thank you so much, Janine, because you are healing. It's interesting. I have a woman who's going to be on our show next month, and we have all the wonderful healing people coming here. And I was listening to some of her material, and she is involved with something called quantum freedom healing. I don't know if you're familiar with that. This is out of Australia. But her name is Melanie Tanya Evans, and she's going to be on in the middle of next month.
Okay.
And it's how to heal from a narcissistic abuse. And, you know, she was a survivor recovering, you know, trying to recover from it. And she has a whole method where people have to go back to what was happening before all this happened. You know, what point in your life, you know, would lead you into living like this or allowing you? Because, for instance, you come from a really, I think, healthy family, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
Wonderful mother and father and a good, you know, Italian type of family. I say Italian because they're close-knit, you know, there's values there, family's so important, and, you know, you're always interacting with your family, visiting your family, where there's all the values have been instilled. So people would say, well, that's really strange. How is she able to put herself in this position to meet somebody who could do this to you?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to come from a bad background to have this happen to you. A lot of our women do come from bad backgrounds, including me. You know, from dysfunctional families. But so what is your norm? You know, I didn't have much of a norm growing up. So to me, I wasn't quite the norm, and so I didn't quite go for the norm. But a lot of times everything was well, and had, you know, you had a good family foundation, good mother, good father, good family unit. So how did this happen to you? And I think that this will be really interesting. I've been reading a lot of her information. And she has a whole program on how to do this. She's been working with clients, and they call it kinesiology and theta healing.
Right.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. But I'm interested in hearing what she has to say.
Yeah, me too.
And my voice sounds funny, because if anybody knows, like, this time of the year in the South, it's like the pollen gets so bad, and so at night I just sound like this, and in the morning
I sound beautiful.
Like this.
I don't know
like
why you say that. No, you don't. Not here on this end. Maybe to you. We're not hearing it. You're sounding beautiful as always. But I want to thank you so much, and I hope you'll come back sooner than later.
I will, Bonnie.
You know, at least every couple of months to inspire our women, to give them great tips, to help them on their road to all kinds of recovery, because once again, it's after a bad marriage or after an abusive marriage, it's a holistic recovery. There's just not
right.
one thing you have to do. You have to really have everything coming at you to make positive changes, and you certainly do that for everyone. So let's tell people again, if they want to go to your website, where do they go?
Yeah, the website is you can do loveyourselftohealth.com or JeanineFinelli.com. And one really good place to go is if you're on Facebook and you like my page, Love Yourself to Health, then every day I post something, and you can just scroll through the page. There's so much information on there, and it could be emotional stuff, relationship stuff, food stuff, drink stuff, exercise, you know, because it is, like Bonnie said, it's a whole person approach. And I just want to, you know, get every listener thinking about tomorrow. And I write about the word tomorrow in my book and what it means to me. And sometimes today doesn't work out the way that we had planned. And so it's okay to hang your hat up and call it a night and go to bed and do something different tomorrow. Call somebody different. Think differently. Say something different. Look at yourself differently. Put your hand over your heart and just say, I love you, to yourself. And do something different tomorrow, and it will build, and that's the best thing you can do for yourself.
Right. You can't let any one day defeat you or any week defeat you. You have to be feeling like, I just can't keep doing this. I want to do something that's going to be different.
Right.
You know, I want my life to turn around in a different way. I'm just going to check out your page for a second before you go.
Okay.
On Facebook, I just saw your website, as I always love your website. It's so relaxing to look at it.
Hey, it's very feminine, and the general public doesn't know why. I'm like,
but
I want
you are.
Flowers.
You know what? I really did appreciate this picture that, you know, you posted the other day with the cucumbers.
Oh, good.
I did see that on Facebook the other day, and it was 5 ways to spring detox with cucumbers.
Right.
And they really look good.
Yeah, I love those little boats like that. I love them.
Yeah, it's really, okay, so I'm just looking for some, well, if you're a foodie, this is definitely a page to go to. Even if it's healthy, it looks beautiful. And
yeah.
Here's a nice little salad. It looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lots of beautiful things on here, little sayings, Valentine's Day, you know, about love, redirecting your love to people who deserve it.
Right.
And here's a beautiful poster. When you say yes to others, make sure you are not saying no to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that so true?
It's so true.
I think
so
we become
true.
The biggest caretakers, and we take care of everybody else's needs before our own.
Right. It's time
and
to take
And this is such a good reminder that people can print this out and cut it up and put it on their refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and remind themselves each day. And you have a beautiful Facebook page. So if you're on Facebook, go to Love Yourself to Health. And just keep scrolling down and look at all the beautiful tips and pictures. And here I love this one where it says, love is always kind if people are not,
if people are not.
Well, I got a little mixed up on here. But it's a great thing.
It's true, because we don't separate. I thought that was so helpful because love is always kind even if people are not. So, you know, don't get down on love. Don't say love sucks or I'll never fall in love, because love is great, even if people are not. And separating the people who love you and the people who don't is what you have to do. But just don't get down on love, because love is always good.
Right, absolutely. And
right,
you can redefine love. Oh, absolutely. You can redefine love. It doesn't always have to just be from a man. I always say the greatest love is learning to love yourself, which is so true. You could be really happy with yourself if you're just by yourself, if you love yourself enough.
Right.
Right? And that's where you have to start, because you can't truly love someone else unless you love yourself, because then you'll never expect from them what you deserve.
Exactly. And that's why if you don't put up those boundaries and you don't start now, the next relationship that comes into your life, and I know for some of you that might seem like it's never going to happen, but it will. You know, you want to be a whole person for that, and you'll attract somebody who's not going to push those buttons. And the first sign of anything that's not sitting right with you or that seems abusive or counterintuitive to what you think is a healthy relationship, you're going to be out of there. Because look what you're going through now. You've learned these lessons, and you're going to be stronger for the next person, and you know, that's a good thing, and it's okay. You know, I read something that says, you know, love doesn't work on a timeline. So whether you're 20 or whether you're 50 or 60 or 70 or 30, it's okay, because love doesn't know a thing about deadlines. And
exactly. You couldn't have said that any better.
Mm-hmm. And so don't get hard on yourself and say, wow, I should have all my junk figured out by now, because, you know, we got dealt a hand of some gift wrap sort of junk, and we had to deal with it. But take that pressure off yourself, because, you know, it's not a race, and it's unfolding, and you're going to be there to make sure that it unfolds in a way that's better for you and those that you love.
And I do want to mention also that Janine is a certified health coach, and she does private coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're at the point where you need to start rebuilding your life and you want to get a coach, you know, some people do well with, you know, life coaches. I knew Suzette, you know, she's on our show each month and she does life coaching. But
right.
You also need health coaching. And health coaching is physical health coaching and also mental health coaching. So, Janine, can they find you on your website? You know,
yeah,
for that, loveyourselfthehealth.com. They can write to you if they want to get coaching.
Yeah,
all
contact
right.
me.
Well,
you know, this is a great time of year for it, too. And,
it is.
You know,
definitely.
But
spring
no,
is always
I,
like the rebirth, right?
It is. It's a rebirth. We hit the reset button, and we're just physically, we want to shed whatever's not serving us, right? I mean, we're coming out of hibernating because we're animals, and we're, you know, so naturally we go through this shedding process, which is why all these great, beautiful greens come into play as opposed to the sweet potatoes and the warming foods, right? Our bodies change, and so it's a really good time to focus on yourself. And it's not about guilt. It's about survival, coping, and joy, and living.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for reminding us of that, and we'll be looking forward to having you back here later in the spring.
Thank
before
you,
summer
Bonnie.
Starts to renew us all again. Thank you so much, Janine. I really love you.
Thank
you.
You
are a
I
life inspiration to me, really.
God.
Okay, so that's our Mutual Admiration Society for tonight, and we're sending all our love to all of our women who are listening either now live or throughout the week and the month, you know, listening to the podcast. And
mm-hmm.
we'll be back again with you here next week, and have a wonderful week. And Janine, again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you, ladies. Love yourself, okay?
Mwah. All right. Thanks, Janine. And good night,
okay.
Everybody. Bye-bye.
Good night.